Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:07 p.m. and today is December 31st. So I'd like to wish everyone a Happy New Year and a prosperous and profitable 2020. And everyone's talking about the next decade. I thought it might be interesting to think about what we were all thinking about at this time 10 years ago. I remember one of the biggest concerns that people had back in 2010 was that there was going to be an imminent financial crisis and that there was a great deal of risk in the market and that no one could take for granted that we were going to have a benign outcome to any asset class. One of the things that David said continually was that after one of the biggest drawdowns in history, how likely was it really that we were ever going to see something like that within just a couple of years of such an event, and that we should be giving the benefit of the doubt to the upside? Well, this has been one of the longest expansions in history. We've already had a decade on the upside. But I think it is important to bear in mind that despite the fact that we've had this incredible round of extraordinary measures, things that were completely inconceivable 12 years ago have been implemented successively in a range of different countries under a range of different administrations, and this has been the fuel that has helped to stimulate this incredible bull market. Well, one of the things that everyone was wondering about, well, I was certainly wondering about at this time last year, was where is the additional sources or the additional source of liquidity going to come from to stimulate the bull market after the big drawdown we had in November and December? Well, it took a little bit of 2019 to deliver that answer, but we definitely have the answer. We are now at a point where we have not just fiscal stimulus in one country, but it's almost as if we have synchronized global fiscal stimulus. There was an effort in 2018 to try and implement a counter-cyclical monetary policy in the USA. They tried to raise interest rates and reduce the size of the balance sheet, and in an effort to offset the stimulus from the Trump tax cuts and deficits that the U.S. government were running, and indeed continue to run. Well, that policy of counter-cyclical policy was abandoned in the middle of 2019, and now we have both monetary and fiscal stimulus hitting the U.S. economy. The ECB had ended its quantitative easing program last year. Well, they're back in quantitative easing again. And the measures that China is introducing, particularly the liberalization of the financial sector. And on the 1st of January, we're going to see that international companies can have 100% ownership of life insurance. Then brokerage will start in April. And then that will also allow foreign companies to have 100% ownership of mutual funds. Well, we could be cynical. We could think, well, golly, this is China closing, I was going to say closing the barn door after the horse has bolted. But the reality is it's the opposite. They are opening up their financial markets after the bulk of the profits have already been made by domestic companies. Now the big question is whether China can continue to attract inward flows. That's something that is very much at the forefront of their thinking. But the easing of restrictions is stimulative. And that, I think, is the most important factor. Well, I created this deficit chart in the middle of this year. And I tried to put together as many of the deficit measures that I have for a range of governments, and then redenominated them into US dollars. And what we now have is a figure. The problem with the figure is that these types of statistics are not reported regularly, and then when we do get them, it tends to give us a jerky trend. But it's at an interesting level right now. We're looking at $1 trillion deficits when we look at the total for annual figures that are coming through for the global or the major global economies. The most important point is not so much the figure on the legend, but rather that it is breaking out to new highs. We haven't seen deficits of this size since 2011. And what it suggests is that we're still in a liquidity-fueled environment. But it's when we start to twin this together with the central bank balance sheets. Well, this is also, I think, really instructive, because one of the problems that had been, or the main considerations that had been right at the forefront of people's minds in 2018, was the fact that $1.5 trillion had been siphoned out of the size of central bank balance sheets. But since September, $700 billion of that has been put back in, and this remains an upward trajectory. So we're back in a stimulative environment. Now, we can certainly think about some of the things that people are worried about. There are definite dislocations we've had in the global markets. The fact, for example, that bond yields remain contained, spreads are still very tight, and yet the number of companies that are in a loss-making position continues to trend higher. Well, that's not a situation that can persist indefinitely. When we then think about the fact that corporate profits have really gone nowhere for the last 5 years, and yet EPS growth has been trending higher, well, what that is suggestive of is a dislocation that is also unsustainable. But the most important point is that both those trends are heavily influenced by liquidity, and it is the monitoring of liquidity is probably going to be by far the most instructive characteristic that we can do, but also to monitor the consistency of the trends. Now, when we look at a log scale chart of the S&P 500, we can see that there are these ranges, and these ranges are one above another, and each of the ranges, when we've had these very significant pullbacks, comes back to test the 1,000-day moving average. When we get the breakouts, we get a little consolidation in the region of the peak, and then we get these very persistent advances. It's exactly the same in 2012, and the very persistent advance. And the advances can last anything up to 18 months. Well, when we look at when was the breakout, it was originally in June. That suggests that the next significant peak in the S&P 500, if the cyclicality and the consistency of this trend is to be repeated, then we're probably looking at sometime towards the end of 2020. And that is, of course, assuming that this trend remains consistent. A consistent trend is a trend in motion. Well, we can then think that as long as it is sustaining its move above the trend mean represented by the 200-day moving average, then we can conclude that this is still a benign environment. It would really require a move below the 1,000-day moving average to question the consistency of the long-term trend. We are unlikely to see a test of the 1,000-day moving average within the next 18 months, or at least within the next 12 months, a peak and a test of the 1,000-day moving average probably within 6 months of that peak. That's if this trend remains consistent. Well, what that suggests is that between now and the towards the end of this year, and obviously the big question is going to be around the election, well then, that suggests that there is going to be a lot of focus on the US election next year. First, of course, will be the question about who is going to be the Democratic nominee, and subsequently who is going to win the presidential election. But as long as this stock market breakout remains intact, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But of course, this is a liquidity-fueled environment, and when governments are running spectacular deficits and central banks are in a very clear process of expanding their balance sheets, then the logical conclusion is that something has to give way to that kind of pressure, and it's likely to be the value of fiat currencies. Well, then that's one of the reasons why gold is doing better here. This continues to look like a first step above the base. It has rallied over the course of the last week to break its sequence of lower rally highs from the peak in September. Well, we do have the potential for some consolidation here. It has been rallying rather well in just about all of December. Silver prices were off their peak in here today, and it hasn't quite yet been able to break the sequence of lower rally highs. Platinum had gotten back right back up to test the $1,000 area in here today, but also has paused, but it has definitely broken its sequence of lower rally highs. And again, this looks like a consolidation. It looks like just a mild consolidation in the region of $1,000. And $1,000 has been an area of resistance for the last 3 years. It's probably going to take just a little bit more time before we see a break on the upside. Where we have seen a break, however, is in the unhedged gold miners. The Gold Bugs Index pushed on to new recovery highs this week. And considering that this is the last week of the year, I think it is supportive of the view that we are back in a demand dominated environment generally for the precious metals sector. Now, the other big evolution that we've had in December has been the break higher by the European stock markets. Now, we're probably going to get a little consolidation going on in here, but I think it is more likely than not we're going to see Europe. It's likely we're going to see Europe, I think, turning to a position of outperformance next year. Now, the FTSE 100 has been ranging mostly above the 7,000 level for the last 3 years. It is likely to face a little a resistance from the strength of the pound, which was up over a cent again in here today. I think it is more important that the pound has, in fact, demonstrated support around the 130 area. It has also broken the almost two-year succession of lower rally highs. And when we look at the pound versus the euro, well, it has so far sustained the move to up and out of this base formation. There is the clear potential that we're going to see the pound do better in 2020. That does suggest that more domestically focused plays are going to outperform in the UK, and the FTSE 250 is certainly, I think, signalling that that has been the broad conclusion of most investors. Then when we think about the Australian market, the Australian dollar has broken its downtrend. It was in positive territory again in here today. This is a very clear break of the succession of lower rally highs. When we then think about the outlook for the domestic or the ASX 200, it was in negative territory today, coming back to test the region of the trend mean. But then when we think about the resources sector, it is coming back up towards the region of the peak for 2019, and it has been trending consistently higher. When then we think about what is it that generally tends to animate the Australian economy, it's the resources sector. And the continuous commodity index has also broken its sequence of lower rally highs. So we start to string these things together. We're seeing that the dollar index has been under pressure. Commodities are doing better. Commodity-related currencies are doing better. There is the real potential that one of the big trends we're going to see in 2020 is an underperformance by the dollar. And that does set up the potential for a global reflation trade. The USA is still outperforming on an economic growth front, but there is the potential that that is going to be less important than the liquidity argument. There is a wall of dollars hitting the global economy, and there is no other central bank is quite as stimulative as the Federal Reserve is right now, and that is something that should weigh on the dollar. But it is also likely to create a more reflationary environment everywhere else. Now, when we think about China, Tencent is, I think, the one of the most owned of the big tech companies, and it has broken its sequence of lower rally highs. It's back above the trend mean. It's coming up towards this $400 level, and while there is a short-term overbought condition, I think there is a more benign-looking outcome for Tencent today than we've had in really any part of 2019. And that is generally supportive of the view that the stock market in China has priced in a lot of bad news, particularly in Hong Kong. And the H-share index is pushing up and away from this 11,000 level. That doesn't mean that the questions about Hong Kong have been answered, but the broader point is that they're not getting worse. And a crisis has to be seen to be getting worse for it to continue to have the same psychological impact on prices. So we are definitely seeing a more, I think, opportunistic attitude being proposed towards Chinese assets, and the liberalization of the financial sector on the mainland should be positive. So the A-share index is coming up towards the upper side of its range that's persisted for most of this year, and the CSI 300 is breaking out above the 4,000 level. Well, I've been of the view for a substantial amount of time that China is not an investor's market. It isn't the kind of place you can really put money in and then walk away from. It's more of a trader's market, but it does suggest the price action we're seeing at the moment does suggest that we are back in a more risk-on environment from a trader's perspective in China. The banking sector also is coming up towards the upper side of the range that has been, or at least it's been ranging below 16,000 now for the better part of 5 years. And there is the potential now that it is better supported around this level on this occasion than it had been on the last two occasions. Then the Nifty index in India is also holding on to its gains. I think it's India where we've seen the greatest number of positive macro developments in 2019. Generally, these types of developments take upwards of 6 months to a year to really find traction in the economy, and that suggests that we're going to start seeing that kind of positive news coming through from growth statistics in India at some point in 2020. Then when we think about the US economy, there's a lot of argument about why small caps haven't been doing better, but the Russell 2000 spent most of the year ranging and has broken up and out of that range over just the last 6 weeks. That's really quite a positive development. Then when we look at the regional banks index, it has also broken its sequence of lower rally highs and bouncing from the region of the trend mean, so that is also positive. The Philadelphia Semiconductors Index is looking really quite overextended right now, and it has accelerated somewhat over the course of the last month, so I think it is here where we probably can anticipate some consolidation in the first month of 2020. But as long as we're still in a benign liquidity environment where we have the potential for synchronized global monetary and fiscal stimulus, then it's hard to argue with the fact that we're going to see potential for bubbly activity to evolve, but certainly the potential for trends to persist and for gold to start to outperform, not least because people view the bubbly activity as a rationale for having some form of hedge. And with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.